And we're holding on page 56 in Brachos, about the middle of the page. If anybody's using a different edition, then it's the middle of Ois Mem Aleph. We mentioned something that Rabbi Chiya Bar Ami said in the name of Ullah about that we were talking various things in Agadah the last couple of daf, and we've been talking off and on about things about the importance of a shul and of davening and so forth. And we had something that he said that miyom shachorav beis hamikdash, ever since the beis hamikdash was chorav, Hashem has in his world only the four amos of halacha. So now the Gemara brings some other things from Rabbi Chiya Bar Ami in the name of Ullah, as it often does. In simple English, it means, in other words, that the only place that Hashem has, like his Shechina rests more than any place else, is the four amos where a person is learning halacha. We mentioned in the Shira the other day, by the way, the last time that we were together and learned something that the Rambam says on this. He has a long explanation about what the purpose is of a person in this world. What are they able to create the human being for? Is ultimately in order to know as much as possible about Elikus. And the way a person accomplishes that is by the most perfect way of accomplishing that, he says, was when a person understands the Ratzon of the Eibishter as expressed in Halacha. And therefore, that's what it means. Like Hashem has in the world, like the whole purpose for which Hashem considered it worthwhile to create a whole world was just for such a person. So the Gemara says, "Va'amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Ami Mishmei De'ula La'olam Yodur Adam Mokim Rabbi." A person should always live in the same place where his Rebbe does, because his Rebbe keeps him on the straight path. And we see, as an example, Shekolz Man Shimi Ben Gera Kayim, as long as Shimi Ben Gera was alive. Now, Shimi Ben Gera, we know him from the Psukim over there. He's the one who cursed out David when he was running away from Avshalom. However, we also find that he was actually Shlomo's Rebbe. When before David passes away, he tells him about various unfinished business from his reign, and he says to him, "Vehine imcha Shimi ben Gera yimini b'machorim." So when he says imcha, it means that Shimi ben Gera was actually Shlomo's Rebbe. So as much as he didn't have the best midas, as we see how he treated David, but he was somebody who Shlomo could learn from. So we see, as long as Shimon ben Gera was alive, lo nasa Shlomo as bas pare. During all that time, Shlomo did not marry bas pare. Rashi points out that you find in Sefer Melachim, it tells how eventually Shlomo found found an excuse to be able to carry out the sentence against Shimi. Back when Shimi had cursed David, and afterwards, after Avshalom's revolt failed, then Shimi came to ask Mechila by David, and David promised, "I'm not going to kill you," even though some of David's advisors were telling him, "You should, what a chutzpaniach." Anyway, but he tells Shlomo, "Be careful with this guy. He is your Rebbe, but first you see how he acted before, so be careful that ultimately he'll get what's coming to him. This way he'll get his punishment in Olam Hazeh, and he'll have his place in Olam Haba unimpaired." So in the Pesukim, it describes over there how Shlomo put Shimi under city arrest, basically. He told him he has to stay in Yerushalayim. Eventually, Shimi left Yerushalayim for personal reasons. And when Shlomo found out about it, then he used that as the sort of an excuse to say, "Look, you're a Murid B'Malchus, and between you and me, we know what you did to my father. And that's the real reason why you're in this situation in the first place." And he had him executed. Then right after that, that's the end of Perek Beis and Melachim Aleph, the beginning of Perek Gimel, Shlomo married Bas Parei. So the Gemara's understanding, Rashi mentions it on the Pesukim also, that it's meant to put them together. As soon only after Shimi passed away did Shlomo go and marry Bas Parei, and we know all the negative consequences that came from that. Well, ultimately, I mean, a person disobeys any command of a king, he's chayiv misa. So if Shlomo told him, and actually you have in the Pesukim over there, he actually made Shimi swear in the name of Hashem that he wouldn't ever leave Yerushalayim. So when he did, then he's chayiv misa for the Mirid of Malchus alone. But Shlomo tells him, "You and I know good and well the real reason why you're in this situation is because of how you treated my father David." Anyway, the point is, though, that still we're saying as long as Shimi was alive, then he had a positive effect on Shlomo, and Shlomo wouldn't descend to marrying Bas Parei. So the Gemara says, "Bartanya al Yodur." Don't we have another braisa that says a person shouldn't live where his Rebbe lives? And the answer is like Asha, hod kayifle. It depends whether the person is subjugated to his Rebbe. If his Rebbe tells him off for doing wrong, is he going to listen to him or not? In this case, if Shimi was still alive and Shlomo says to him, I'm planning to marry Bas Parei, and Shimi tells him, "Don't do that," then Shlomo would have listened. So it's better for him to live in the place of his Rebbe. On the other hand, if a person's not going to listen to his Rebbe anyway, then Rashi says, "Mutav Yerushogin Valyu Mizidim." He's not going to listen anyhow, so he might as well be over Beshogin. So that's the distinction. And the Gemara says another one. Va'amar Rabchi ba'ami mishmei de'ula gadol hananim yigia yosim yari shemayim. A person who enjoys what he the results of what he does from his with his hard work is even greater than a yore shemayim. Now, what does that mean? There are dozens of explanations on it. We're not possibly going to do them all justice, but we'll do some of them at least. So why? First, let's do the rest of the Gemara. When it comes to Yore Shemayim, the Pasuk praises him and says he's praiseworthy. Ashrei, he's praiseworthy, he's fortunate, etc. You have a different Pasuk that says Yigia Kapech Kisoicho, Ashrecha B'Toyv Loch, a double expression. Ashrecha Ba'Olam Hazeh, you're fortunate in this world. B'Toyv Loch La'Olam Haban, you have it good in Olam Habol. Yore Shemayim, like Sidei B'Toyv Loch. Whereas by the Yore Shemayim, we see that it doesn't say anything about Toyv Loch. So the nanami yigiyoi is greater in that sense. Now, how is that? So again, there are a lot of explanations. Hakosev over here says that obviously we're talking both people over here. They're both yirei Hashem. But when you have one person is focused on his yira of Hashem, the other one is is tackle working with Yigia Kaplov. So you would think the first one, you'd think the first one is greater. So therefore, the Priya is telling us that no, ultimately you want to have that the one who's Nanim Yigia, the other one, the one who's not Nanim Yigia, yeah, the end of page 56 we are at this point. Okay, yeah. The one who's Nanim Yigia at least is not going to need to end up taking stuck or to need to come on to other people. So in that sense, he's greater than the one who's only Yore Shemayim. And furthermore, then he goes on to say that what it is the one who the Yore Shemayim, he says b'mitzvos of chofetz ma'od, meaning he doesn't care about the schar of the mitzvahs. You would think the nanami yigia, you would think that he's doing yigia in order to earn a living. So you would think maybe he ought not to do that. His yira should tell him that he shouldn't be working so hard, and that way he'll be zoich at the schar. So therefore, the pasuk has to specifically tell us b'toiv loch that he has an advantage, that he actually worked in order to earn his living, and therefore Tov Lo Lo Lama Bo. So that's one. Marsha talks about the idea that if he's not Nanim Yigiyoi, so how is he taka earning a living? He may end up using up some of his schar that was supposed to be saved for Olam Haba in this world. Whereas if he's Nanim Yigiyoi, he's working hard for a living, then he has his full share of Olam Haba. And there are many, many other examples. There are many, many other explanations. There's another one that, for example, a Nanim Yigiyoi is somebody, therefore, because like Hakosev said, he doesn't need other people. Therefore, he has more of an ability to give them Musar, to tell them the right thing to do and to have them listen to him. Mashenkin, if he depends on them, they're apt to say, well, who are you to talk to us? You depend on us anyhow. In fact, Ashkach Pratis, this morning's Daf HaYomi talked about a similar concept. A Dayan should not be somebody who depends on the tzibur. Even for example, if he regularly borrows things from people, and he on the other hand doesn't have things, objects to lend to them, and he's borrowing objects from them, then he's actually possible to judge Dinei Torah for them, because then the fact that he needs them so much means he's going to end up being partial to them. So that fits with this Gemara also. Anaf Yosef brings an idea from the Rama Mifano that says that it means on a deeper level. The Nanami, the Yore Shemayim is somebody who has a natural weak Yetzirah, whereas the Nanami Yigia is somebody who has a naturally strong Yetzirah, Beinani of Tanya, and he works on overcoming it. Therefore, he's Godol, therefore he has a greater schar than the one who doesn't naturally have to fight his Yetzirah. And you find something similar with the Alter Rebbe makes a point in Perek Lamed of Tanya that you might have a person who looks down on the Hamoinam and says, you know, so I don't have these Yetzaharas. Why do they? And he doesn't chapzach that, for example, that he's, as the Alter Rebbe says, you know, Mitzun and Mitivai, he's a naturally cold and frigid kind of guy, and therefore he doesn't have these taivas that they do, and they overcome them, and therefore they're on a greater level than he is. There's also there's places in Chassidus that seem to say the idea is Parshat Nanim Yigiyoi is bringing down all the course into the Gashmiistic world, whereas the Yore Shemayim, the one who's fartift in Torah and Mitzvahs, so he's involved with all the course all the time, but how is he mevarer the world around him? So not necessarily as much. So therefore he loses out on that. And then there's dozens of other explanations about the ins and outs of it. Okay, continues the Gemara. So now the Gemara then digresses to talk about some things about Shnai Mikra, about certain dinim of Kriyas HaTorah. In particular, you're not allowed to leave in the middle of Kriyas HaTorah. You're not even allowed to learn Torah in the middle of it. And then that eventually leads the Gemara to talking about the mitzvah of the din of Shnai Mikra Ve'echad Targum. And so the Gemara mentions, and so now we have here in Ein Yaakov, Rabbi Bar Abaye Sovel Ashlominu LaParshiyosa B'Kulei Shata B'Mala Yom HaKippurah. Rabbi Bar Abaye, the whole year he was busy learning Torah, so he thought to complete the parashiyos, to complete Shnai Mikra Ve'echad Targum of the whole year on Erev Yom Kippur, because then he'd have time to be able to catch up on everything that he had missed throughout the year. Why dafka Erev Yom Kippur? One reason is because he wanted the extra schus before to take in with him to Yom Kippur. Yom Yaakov mentions a point that he came from B'nai Eli, who passed away young. Therefore, he had extra reason that when Sifrei Chaim, the Sifrei Meisim, are psuchim in front of Hashem, that he wants that extra boost. With that said, there is a girsa that Rishonim have that the word is not dekulei shata, but rather dekulei kala. So what it is you have the Yarchei Kala during Adar and during Elul. So during those times, he's extremely busy learning and teaching the Talmidim, who come from out of town during only those 2 months. So therefore, he figured to make up the parashiyos that he had missed during those weeks, so the 4 weeks of Adar and the 4 weeks of Elul, he's going to make up on Erev Yom Kippur. But Tonele Chia Barab Midifti, but Chia Barab Midifti taught him a braisa, implying that he shouldn't do that, because like this, Ksiv, you have one pasuk that says, you should afflict your souls, you should start fasting on the ninth of the month in the evening before Yom Kippur. So, what do you mean? We don't fast on the ninth of Tishrei, we fast on the tenth of Tishrei. Ella loy malach. Why is the pasuk referring to Tisha? Loy malach. Come and tell you. Kol ha'oicha b'shoyse b'chi. A person who eats and drinks on the and has a big soda on the ninth of Tishrei on Erev Yom Kippur. Ma'alal b'kosuk kila misanat chi v'ashiri. To kila misanat chi v'ashiri. Then the pasuk that Hashem counts it for him as if he fasted on both the ninth and the tenth. He has the schar of that. So in other words, Chiyah Barav is telling him, you want to spend your time Erev Yom Kippur catching up on Shnai Mikra Ve'echad Targum, but instead, Erev Yom Kippur, you're supposed to be having a big soda. That's your avodah for the day. So don't do that. Instead, work on your Shnai Mikra Ve'echad Targum some other time. If he's gonna be making it up, right? Instead of Erev Yom Kippur, let him make it up a different day, right? Right. Well, you have all the dinim about Shnai Mikra Ve'echad Targum. One of them, Tosfos mentions in the Sugya, by the way, that from Mincha of the previous Shabbos, in principle, is already considered Im Hatzibur, because now that they started reading the next parasha, Mincha of Shabbos, then you can already consider that the Chiyuv of Shnai Mikra Ve'echad Targum for the coming Shabbos begins then. Al Pi Kabbalah, you have the idea that you're supposed to do it Erev Shabbos Achar Chatzos. You have the minhag of the Rabbeim that they would do part of it on Thursday night, and then again, and then start over again Friday afternoon, and then do the end of it Shabbos morning. Yeah. So then the Gemara goes on with various other things in this connection, and the Gemara ends up mentioning Amalei Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Libnei, that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi told his children several statements of advice for life. One of them was to be careful to be mashlim parshiyosu v'matzibu, to be careful with Shnai Mikra Ve'echad Targum, which is why it comes in over here. And another one, he tells them, he's zaru b'zokin sheshochach talmudei machmas oinsei. Be careful with the honor of an old Talmud Chacham who forgot his learning because of an oinus, for example, because he became sick. We find, for example, in a number of places in Shas that Rabbi Yosef, that happened to Rabbi Yosef, the Amora, the Rebbe of Abaya and Rava, he at one point in his life became very sick and forgot his learning. And you find in a number of places where Abaya in particular, and sometimes other Talmudim of his, would actually have to remind him of what he had previously taught them. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is saying, if you have a Talmud Chacham in that situation where he becomes old and sick and forgets his learning, still have derech eretz for him, for the Torah that he used to know. Damrinan, because it's just like we say, luchas v'shivir luchas, munachim, munachos v'aren, that both the whole luchas and the broken luchas were placed together in the aren, and the same way, a Talmud Chacham who used to know Torah and now has forgotten it, machnas oinsei, then you should still consider him like a broken luchas and still have respect for him. Mephoshim point out, by the way, in this connection, an interesting point. The Gemara in Shabbos tells us that if you have a Sefer Torah that's so worn out that most of the letters are rubbed out, unless you have a certain minimum number of letters in it, you actually can't save it from a fire on Shabbos. If it has a minimum of 85 intact letters in it, then you can save it because that's the size of the parashah by Hibin Soya, but any less than that, then you just have to leave it there, even though it'll get burnt. So yet we see over here, we're saying that Zok and Sheshachach Talmudai, we have a pashtus, he forgot everything. He doesn't even have 85 letters of learning left, and we're still saying they have derech eretz on him. So one interesting answer is there, we're talking about a Sefer Torah, which was written by a person. Ultimately, it's written by a human sefer. The luchos were carved out by the Eibishter and a Talmud Chacham who learned Torah. The Torah is, after all, engraved in him, like the way the letters were engraved in the luchos. And therefore, even when the letters are gone, the luchos themselves still have enough dusha that you have that you still have to have derech eretz for him. That was both sets of luchos Hashem carved out the letters. The first luchos Hashem carved out the actual luchos themselves as well. The second one was psal lecha. Hashem tells him, "You carve out the shape of the luchos, the echtov, and I will write on them the aseres hadibros." Yeah. So the Gemara continues. Amalei Rava libnei. Rava tells his children, since we mentioned some things, some instructions for life that Rabbi Shimon Levi taught his children, then the Gemara mentions in this connection also that some things that Rava told his children. So Amalehu Rava libnei. Rava told his children the following horois for life. Number one, k'shatim choischim basar. He tells them, when you're cutting a piece of meat, al tachtuchu al gava yad. Don't cut it on top of your hand. In those times, people wouldn't necessarily use a table or a cutting board or something for cutting meat. They would hold the piece of meat in their hand and cut it. He's warning them, don't do that. Ikadami mishum sakana. Some say because of the danger, the person might cut off his hand. The ikadami mishum kilkul suda. Others say because it'll ruin the meal. Because even if you don't cut off your hand, even if the person doesn't cut off his hand, chas v'shalom, he still might injure himself, and now he's going to bleed onto the meat, and people will be disgusted by it, and the suda will be ruined. Number two, he tells them, "Val teshwa mitas aramis." He tells them, "Don't sit on the bed of an aramis," which the Gemara is going to discuss soon in a couple of lines what that means. And three, he tells them, "Val tavru achore besakneses b'shoshat tzibur mespalin." Don't walk behind a shul while the tzibur is davening. Now the Gemara goes on to explain further on, which is not here in Ein Yaakov, because the idea is, well, the Gemara doesn't actually explain the reason for it, but the Gemara mentions the Gemara mentions various exceptions to it. If a person is wearing tefillin, for example, then it's not so bad because everybody sees him the kabbal omafas shemayim. If he's carrying a burden, everybody realizes he can't stop in the shul because he's busy carrying something. And there's a number of other exceptions. But other than that, the idea is otherwise it looks like he's a poyrik oil, like he doesn't want to even go and bother to daven with the tzibur in the shul. So actually, the Gemara mentions that as one of the exceptions. If you have more than one shul in town, then it's not so bad because then people will figure he's going to the other shul. With that said, by the way, I once saw a verse. Somebody said the problem with having two shuls in town is once there are two shuls in town, a person has the option of going to neither one because then he can get away with it. People won't see him in shul. They're going to think he went to the other one. And yeah. Okay. So what's this? Alteshva mitas aramis. Ika de amri alu loy tignu b'loy krishma. One explanation is that Rava meant by that statement, he meant don't go to sleep without saying krishma. So Rashi explains, if a person goes to sleep without saying Krishna, then he's lying in his bed like a goita. So therefore, he's telling them, don't do that. Marsha has a different explanation. He says that, now like this, you're allowed, mitzad halacha, you're allowed to say Krishna in any language. The halacha is, the Mishnah tells us in Sota, and this is the halacha, elu ne'monin b'chol loshen, there's a number of things that you're allowed to say in any language. Krishna is one of them. A person is perfectly yoitza if he says in English, "You, O Israel, the Lord is our God," etc. Although I should mention, by the way, there are poskim who hold that maybe you can't use a substitute for the name of Hashem. According to that, you'd have to say, "Hear, O Israel, Adonai is our God," etc. But anyway, whatever. The point is however, Marashah says, with Betzibur, there's no problem with that because Betzibur, the Eibishter listens directly to the people's tefillahs. You don't need Malachim to bring them to the Eibishter. Therefore, you can be saying them in any language and the Malachim will, and there's no, you don't have to worry about the Malachim not paying attention. But when you're davening b'yichidus, we know that the malachim, the Gemara tells us in Sota, the malachim don't pay attention to or don't understand loshen aram. Machlokas are showing him whether it means specifically Aramaic or in general any Goyish language. The point being, that's why, in fact, we have Sut and Tfilis. For example, there are parts of Slichas. There are some paragraphs in Slichas that are in Aramaic, and we taka don't say them b'yichidus for that reason. Well, that fine. I mean, by definition, that's only b'tzibur because you're taking out the Sefer Torah. But for example, Right, that's the point. In the Tzibur, it doesn't matter. But the point is, for example, in Slichas before Rosh Hashanah, you have the paragraphs Machay or Masay, and the two paragraphs Morin de Mishmaya, which Taka, if you're saying Slichas be Yechidus, you don't say them. Why? Because you need the Malachim then, when you're davening the Yechidus, you need the Malachim to go bring your Tfilas to the Eivishter, and since the Malachim don't care to know Lashon Harami, then they're going to ignore that. So the vort is, Maharsha says, Rava is telling his children, when you're saying Krishma Shalamita, where of course you're saying it Yechidus, you don't say that with a minion, don't say it in Aramaic. You want to say Krishma in the Tzibur, you want to say Krishma in Shul, in Aramaic, fine, Gesundahe, but don't do that Yechidus when you're going to bed, because then the Malachim won't take it up to the Eishet. So that's one version. The Ikad Amri Latinsivu Giyota, another version, another explanation of what Rava meant when by saying don't sleep on the bed of an Aramis means don't marry a Giyotis. Now, why not? What's wrong? I mean, we have many famous Giyotis in Jewish history. We have Rus, we have Rochav, we have other examples. What? Yeah. So Taka, one answer is, of course, you know, it depends on the circumstances. Sometimes you have an exceptional Giyotis where we're not applying that. But ordinarily, they often bring with them a certain mindset and a certain mentality and whatever from their Goyish days. In particular, Rabbi Yaakov Emden says it may specifically be talking about where they were previously married to a Goy and now they became a Giyotis. And now like they have a certain connection with their former Goyish life that... other than that, though, so a couple of the Mephoshim point out over here, there's a possibility that Rava was a Kohen. The Gemara discusses in some places, we know Abaya was a Kohen. It mentions in some places, you have different Girsois in Rosh Hashanah and in Yevamos and other places, whether it was Rabba and Abaya or Rava and Abaya, who were descended from Beis Eved. So if it was Rava, then the point is, a Kohen is not allowed to marry a Giyotis, so he's warning his children to be careful with that halacha. Different vote they say on that, because even if he himself wasn't a Kohen, his wife was the daughter of a Kohen. His wife was the daughter of Rav Chista. And we know from various Gemaras that Rav Chista was a Kohen. So therefore, even if he himself and his children are not Kohenim, because of course it goes in the father's line, not the mother's, nevertheless, he's still saying that it shouldn't be that descendants of Kohenim are mixed together with descendants of David. Anyway, so there's that. The Ikadamri Aramis Mamish. A third possibility is it means an actual, literally, it means the bed of an Aramis. So what's the problem with that? Well, Mishum Maisa did a papa. The reason would be because of the story that happened with Rapapa. The story is, Dir Rapapa Ozel Gabe Aramis. Rapapa one time went to visit a Goyish woman. Hotzia Loimita. She brought out a bed for him. Omra Lo Shave. And she says to him, sit down on it. Omalah, he says to her, any Yoshev and Shitak Bias Amita, I'm not sitting down until you lift up the bed or the mattress or whatever. He Bias Amita, she lifted it up, Motzosham Tinik Mess, and they found they were dead kid. He was trying to make a blood libel against him that he had sat down on the bed or the couch and killed her son. What's the back? It's interesting, by the way, Rashi mentions the same point. Rashi gives all the details, which then it's mashma that Rashi did not have in his Gursa of the Gemara, did not have these two lines that give the story. So apparently in Rashi's version of the Gemara, it just said Mishum Maisa de Rapapa without saying what the Maisa was, and therefore Rashi has to supply the story. Rabbi Hananel and Rabbi Nissim Goin give further details. What's Rapapa doing by this Goita in the first place? The vote was he had lent them money. Rapapa, we find in various places in the Gemara, was quite rich. So he had lent them money and they're not paying back in time. So he's going to nudge them about the loan. So one time they got sick of it and they decided, you know what, we'll finally get them off our backs. And they tried to make this whole blood libel, but he was wise to them. And therefore they weren't able to carry out their plot. But according to that third opinion, Rava, who was actually Rapapa's Rebbe, was warning his children about the same kind of thing, knowing that these kinds of things can happen. Be careful about sitting on a Goita's bed because you never know what they're up to with their plots. So Mikanomu, based on that, Chacham said, Mikanomu Chachamim, based on this, the Chacham said, also Leishav Amitas Arams. And then Rava's other thing that he had told his children was, don't walk behind the shul when the tzibur is davening. And there the Gemara goes into the whole discussion about the various exceptions to that. If the shul has more than one door, if there's more than one shul in town, if you're wearing tefillin, if you're carrying a load, et cetera, et cetera.
Why can't a normal observer have a limud chos? Why do they have to think that maybe guys...
Because after all, if there's only one door of the shul and there's only one shul in town and you're not wearing tefillin, you're not carrying a burden, Taka, the tzibur is davening and over there, why aren't you going in and joining? Okay. That's the point. The Gemara is saying, if there's another shul in town, the pashto is something. I mean, when we say in town, I mean, I guess, you know, we got to distinguish. If, let's say, hypothetically, if there was only one shul in Crown Heights, you wouldn't say maybe the guy's going to have a shul in Borough Park, you know. The pashto is, we mean in the same neighborhood, you know.
So many halachas where Yiddishkeit takes the opinion of, you might be judged.
V'yisim nekiyim mashem, because you have something called v'yisim nekiyim mashem l'Yisrael. You're obligated to act in such a way that's above suspicion. Even though you're right, a person has an obligation to be done l'kafsfos. But nevertheless, on the other hand, you taka, when you're looking at this guy walking by the shul, you taka shouldn't be jumping to conclusions. But on the other hand, if you are the person walking it behind the shul, b'shal shatzim mismalin, you have a responsibility to act in such a way that's above suspicion. The Gemara continues, Tanya, Amar Rav Akiva, since one of the things we mentioned that Rava told his children is to be careful when you're cutting meat, not to be holding the piece of meat in your hand when you cut it. So now in this connection, the Gemara brings a similar thing that Rav Akiva said about that together with a couple of other things. Tanya, Amar Rav Akiva, Begimol Dvarim Oyev Anies HaModiyim. There are three things for which I love the people of Moda. Nowadays, Moda is part of Iran. Number one, when they cut a piece of meat, and like we said, they cut it only with the meat lying on the table. They don't cut the meat while they're holding it in their hand, like Rava advised his children before. So the second one is, Marsha, by the way, brings another explanation from Yalkut Shimoni, that what it means is, instead of biting off a piece of their food, they would cut off a piece and then eat it, which is a more dignified way of eating. Well, maybe an apple is different. I mean, we're saying Chachos was a boss.
Okay, some people won't buy it for an apple.
Okay. And, you know, a good practical thing is also, by the way, if a person's gums are sore, you know, or if they haven't been to the dentist lately or whatever, you know, or they're on floss and their gums are likely to bleed, it might be a better idea not to bite into an apple anyhow, because then anytime blood comes on it, you're going to have to wash it off before you can continue eating it. So then it might be a good idea to cut the apple in slices anyhow. But yeah, it is true. That's not, yeah. Second of all, Shinoshkin, when they kiss one another, Ein Noshkin El Al Gavaya. They kiss somebody only on the back of the hand. Like you find nowadays, the Sfaradim will do that to a rub. They'll kiss them out of respect on the hand. The point is, Rashi says that this way it avoids, like, you know, you're not inflicting your saliva on the other guy. Marsha says a different point on it, that it's a matter of tznius. Yes, a husband and wife, for example, will kiss each other on the lips. But other than that, when you're kissing somebody out of affection or out of respect or whatever, better to do it, for example, on the hand or on some other part of the body where it doesn't show such a physical closeness. Like, and the third one, Rabbi Akiva says, when they're taking advice, when they're discussing of something with each other of what to do, Ein Yoytzin El Basada. They do that only in the field rather than inside a building, because it actually brings the expression the walls have ears. Well, yeah, but they're the expression. Rashi brings the popular expression the walls have ears. So Amar Rav Adar, you find, by the way, in the Friedrich Rebbe's description, the Rishimus HaMeiser, he mentions over there at one point the interrogation room that he brought him into. They literally, the walls had ears. They actually had listening tubes built into the walls that they could listen from the other side and take what you're saying and twist it into whatever. Yeah. Amar Rav Adar ba'Ava Mikra, for that last one, where do we have a pasuk that's a good idea? We find by Yishlach Yaakov, when Yaakov is getting ready to leave Lavan's house, he sends messengers, by Yikra l'Rachel Oleya, and he calls for Rachel Oleya, Hasada El Tzoynei, to come to the field where he has his sheep. Now, Marsha points out, you could say that, okay, he didn't have the time to go to them because he's busy guarding Lavan's sheep. We know from later on in that perek how conscientious and careful Yaakov was with watching the sheep. Gnuv si yom, gnuv si laila, et cetera, the whole speech that he gives Lavan over there. But still, the fact that the Pasuk makes a point of mentioning that he called him Hasada is to tell us this point that it's better to discuss such sensitive things in the field where nobody can eavesdrop. Similar, the Gemara says, Tanya Omeram Gamliel, Vishloisha Dvarim Ani Oyev as a Parsian. There are three things, three Midas Tovis for which I love the Persians. Heim Tznuim Bachilosam, their Tznia stick in the way they eat. Now what that means, Ben Yehoyada explains, the Gemara in Ksubas tells us that when you're eating something, especially when it's something that has a good, that has a really good aroma or something like that, you should make sure that you give the waiter a little bit of it to eat, because otherwise he's going to have a taiva for it and it can actually put him in danger. The Gemara tells a couple of incidents about that. One of them actually involving the court of one of the Persian kings over there, named Izgadar or something, where a couple of Amiroyim are sitting in front of the palace and a waiter for the king passes by with a tray full of food for the king, and one of Amiroyim smells it and develops a craving for it and his life is almost in danger. So like this, Ben Yehoyada says, the vote is the Persians, therefore, in general, would prefer to eat in private individually so that they don't cause this problem, so that they don't cause that other people are going to be attracted to the smell of the food and possibly be in danger. So Rav Gamliel says, I appreciate that midah tova that they have. They're also tzniyistic when they go to the bathroom, which in various places in Or Masechta it talks about various dinim in that regard. You actually have halachas. You have halachas early on in Shulchan Aruch and Simon Gimel or so that talks about the various dinim of how a person is supposed to act in the bathroom. We actually have, by the way, further on in Or Masechta, it mentions an interesting concept that the bote kisses shel parsiim. It mentions they had their bath, even their latrines. And of course, they didn't have flush toilets like we have, but they had a system for their latrines where as soon as a person used it, the tsoya would roll into a place out of sight. So it wasn't like the regular ones where it just remains there and then you have to cover it up. Which the post can actually use that as a bit of a precedent for our bathrooms nowadays. What exactly are the dinim of those? To a certain extent, they don't necessarily have the same dinim as the classic bote kisoy of the times of the Gemara. Anyway,
are you talking about these? Are they Gentiles or Jews?
The Pashtus, we're talking about the Goyim, although there are some Mephoshim who say, I mean, how can he say Oyhev on them? So how can he say Oyhev on a Goy? So maybe it does mean the Jews who live in those areas. But, you know, Bechlal, I mean, you do find, you know, there's a popular old Yiddish expression that says, Azovius Christotzich Yidotzich, meaning that the Jews in a certain place tend to take on certain characteristics from the Goyim in those areas. So he could be referring to the Jews of Persia, but he's saying, where do they get these particular habits? The fact is, they got them from the surrounding Goyish culture, and therefore these aspects of their culture are positive things. And the third thing, with Snurim B'davar Acher, they're tzniyistic in how they have tashmish, which we find in, there's actually a Gemara also in Ksubas that says that the Persians would have tashmish fully clothed. The Gemara says you're not supposed to do that, actually. The Gemara says if a husband wants his wife to do that, yotzviyit and ksuba, it's grounds for divorce. But nevertheless, the Persians, in their way of thinking, that was the right way to do. And Rav Gamliel was saying, quote, it's a certain good midah of theirs. Another point you also find, by the way, on Snurin B'davar Acher, you find, for example, with Achashverosh, the famous thing, the Gemara mentions it in Megillah, Rashi mentions it on the Pasuk, that it said, Erev he ba, each of the girls brought him in the evening, and then she'd leave in the morning to Beis HaNashim Sheni. The point is that even Achashverosh, as short of Bezima as he was, he wouldn't be doing it by day, because that shows a certain degree of tzniyus. On the other hand, the Gemara says, don't think that these people of Paras and Madai are such great folks. Because on the other hand, you have a pasuk in Yeshaya, Anitzi Vesi Limkudoshai. Hashem says to the Navi, I have commanded the ones whom I've appointed. The word Mekudosh doesn't always mean holy. It can mean like appointed. The Pasuk is talking about that eventually Yeshaya is saying in Nevuah 100, 150 years in advance about how Bavel, how the kingdom of Bavel is going to end up being destroyed and conquered by Paras Amadai. And Hashem says, I have commanded the ones whom I've appointed, namely Paras Amadai, that their job is to go and destroy Bavel. So why are they called Mekudoshai? Tana Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef taught a braisa. Elo ha-parsim ha-mezumonim of Mekudoshim le-Gehenim. It refers to the Persians who are designated and set aside for Gehenim. So in other words, the Gemara is telling us, even though we're saying they had the Parsim and the Modim had these individual good midas, don't think that after all, they're such great guys. Furt, and even though also the Eibishter gave them this important job of destroying the kingdom of Babel, and they deserved it, nevertheless, don't think they're such great guys either. They're also winding up in Gehenim. Further on, the Gemara talks about, now going back finally to the first Mishnah of the Masechta, where you have the Machloikas, up till when can you say Krishma by night? And you have the Chachamim say Tol Chatzos, and Rav Gamliel says Tol Alois HaShachar. And then the Mishnah goes on to mention that Kodshim can be eaten until Alois HaShachar. So the Gemara mentions it's actually a Machloikas. So when it comes to the Korban Pesach, do you in fact have Midar Raisa Tol Alois HaShachar, or do you have Midar Raisa only Tol Chatzos? Rabbi Akiva holds you have till you have the whole night till the Lois Hashachar. Rabbi Lozim and Azariah holds you have only till Chatzos. So the Gemara analyzes the machloikas in some detail based on Psukim. And so the Gemara says, Amar Ababa, Hakom Moedim, everybody agrees, Kshinigal Yisrael Mitzrayim, when the Jewish people were redeemed from Mitzrayim, Lo Nigal El Be'er. The actual Geula took place at night, in the sense that that was when came Makas Bechodus in the middle of the night, and Paris running around in his pajamas and telling them, Kum Utsu Mitochami. So there's no question all of that happened by night. By night, they're already free to go. As the Pasuk says, that Hashem released you from Mitzrayim by night. So the Rishus was given at night. Right. On the other hand, when they left only by day. As you have, Rashi mentions on the Pasuk that Pare wants them to leave during the night, and Moshe says, we're not thieves, we're not running away, we're not sneaking out in the middle of the night, we'll wait till the morning. So when they actually left was by day, as it says, the day after the Pesach, and you have to realize, by the way, in the Pesukim, when it says Pesach, it doesn't mean what we think of as the Yom Tov of Pesach, it means the day they bring the Korban Pesach, which is Erev Pesach. So on the morning after that, Tesvav Nissen, Yotzu Bnei Yisrael B'Yod Rama, then the Jewish people left proudly with a high hand. So Pesach is Yudalid, right. There is, by the way, you have an interesting point on that. Pasuk in Yeshua mentions when they came into Eretz Yisrael that they ate Mimacharas HaPesach. They ate from the new Tvura of Eretz Yisrael. And the Gemara explains in Kedushin that means that they ate only after they bring brought the Korban Omer. There's a long Tosfos over there that mentions a question from the Evan Ezra. The Evan Ezra traveled around the whole Jewish world. At one point, he met up with Rabbi Natan and they became good friends. So he's quoted there in Tosfos. That he asked the question, doesn't Pesach in Tanakh usually mean Erev Pesach? So in that case, Mimacharas HaPesach would be the first day of Yom Tov. That's too early to eat Chodosh. You can only eat Chodosh the next day. And then the Tosfos discusses the ins and outs of the question. But the Derech Klal, it's true, at least according to Pshat, that Pesach means in Tanakh generally means the 14th of Nisan. So Mimacharas HaPesach is the next day. Well, in that pasuk in Yeshua, the Gemara explains that it means Tesai, the Mimachas HaPesach. But ordinarily, Mimachas HaPesach means the 15th. Yeah. So Alman Nechlepu. So what is the machlokas between Rabbi Lozim and Azariah and Rabbi Akiva? Al Shas Chipozim. The machlokas is when we say that you have to eat the Korban Pesach up to a certain time. Ki b'chipozim yatzasim eretz Mitzrayim. What kind of chipozim? What was the? Who was hasty? Who was in a rush? So he says the chipozin we're talking about was the haste, the rush of the Mitzrayim. They were in a rush to get the Jewish people out as fast as possible because they're saying Korban Mesim. So therefore, now when did that take place? By Chatzos, because that's when Makas Bechoris took place. Therefore, he says that's the deadline for eating the Korban Pesach. Whereas Rabbi Akiva says the chipozin was the haste of the Jewish people to leave Mitzrayim as fast as possible, and since they only left in the morning, then it means that you can eat until Alois Hashach. Tani Nami Hochi, the Gemara says, we learn similarly in a Braisa, when the Pasuk is saying that Hashem brought you out of Mitzrayim by night, what do you mean by night? What do you mean? They didn't leave by night. Didn't they only leave by day? This teaches us that the Geula began during the night because once Makas Bechoris came and Pare came running and saying, at that point, the Geula has started. And therefore, Rabbi Lozman, as I said, that's when that, we based on that, we can determine when is the last time to eat the Korban Pesach.
There are two levels. One is Negalu and one is Yotzu.
Yeah, that's what we're saying, yeah.
So it's...
So now since we're talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim, so naturally that leads the Gemara to digress and talk about a little bit about some of the other events of Yetzias Mitzrayim. The Pasuk says, Daber no ba'ozne omdebe. Hashem says, please speak in the ears of the people and tell them to go and borrow gold and silver from the Mitzrayim. So Amri Dvei Rab Yana, they said in the Yeshiva of Rab Yana, Eino eloloshen bakoshen. The word na is an expression of pleading. Now, you do have some places where na means now. In fact, Targum Onkelos a lot of times translates it as that. Ka'an, which means now. But Rabbi Yana is stressing that over here, na is a loshen bakosha. It means, Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Moshe, b'vakosha mimcha, I'm pleading with you, leich emor lahem, go tell the Jewish people, b'vakosha mikem, that I'm pleading with you, shalom mitzrayim, play kesev or play zav. Go borrow gold and silver kalim from the mitzrayim. Eitz Yosef points out, since the expression in the pasuk is "daber na ba'oznei ha'am," whereas instead, why do we have two pleas, one from Hashem to Moshe and one from Moshe to the Jewish people? Because the word "na" is smack in the middle there between "daber" and "ba'oznei ha'am." So in effect, it's like as if the word "na" was doubled. "Daber na," I'm telling you, please to speak, and "na ba'oznei ha'am," please tell the people that I'm pleading with them also to do this. I don't want that tzaddik, namely Avram Avinu, to say, what happened to the Brisbane Absurdim? That they're gonna enslave them and afflict them, that Hashem fulfilled. And that Hashem didn't fulfill the part about taking them out with great wealth. So in order that Avram shouldn't complain, then I want you to ask them to take silver and gold. Now, so Hakosev discusses over here. So still, why do you have to beg the Jewish people for that? And why do you have to beg Moshe? And isn't Moshe automatically going to fulfill everything Hashem says? So he says the vote is that, first of all, Moshe himself and the people themselves are likely to think this is a very underhanded way of doing things. You're going to ask these Mitzrayim to borrow the silver and gold, and we know good and well we're not returning it. What kind of a thing is that to do? Now, he goes on to say, Tataka, why did the Eibush to do it in such a way? Why didn't he tell them, to tell them it's stream? If you don't give the Jews your silver and gold, then I'm going to kill you, the same way as all the other Makkas. He says, because the vote is Hashem wanted to mislead them in order that they should end up getting punished in the Yamsu. If they knew that the Jewish people are taking their silver and gold and gone for good, they're never going to bother chasing after them to the Yamsu. So like this, the Eibush wanted to put them in a position where they're going to end up drowned over there, and therefore we had to do this whole workaround. Moshe says something else also, that based on the continuation of the Gemara, he says the Jewish people might have thought without Hashem pleading with Moshe and Moshe pleading with the Jewish people, they're apt to think, okay, Hashem wants to do us a nice favor and give us money. We don't care for the favor. We don't need it. We just want to get out of here as fast as possible. Therefore, Hashem has to stress to Moshe and Moshe has to stress to the Jewish people that no, this is imperative in order to keep the promise to Avraham. There's other points in it also, by the way. First of all, you have, the Rechush Gadol ultimately is a Ruchniastik, a Rechush. So the Eibishter could always tell Avraham Avinu it was fulfilled in that way. They took about 202 of the Rapach Mitzutzes. But nevertheless, the Avraham Avinu could very well say, look, the Avodim B'inu Oisim didn't happen in a Ruchniastik sense. They actually did hard physical labor. So the Rechush Gadol also has to be an actual physical one. Mephoshim also point out over here, when you get down to it, if they're going to, there's going to be Kriyas Yamsuf a week later, they're going to get plenty of Rechush Gadol over there. So nevertheless, Hashem didn't want that Avraham should have that 1 week where he's complaining because he doesn't know yet necessarily that there's going to be a Kriyas Yamsuf. So therefore, the Eibishter wanted right away at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim that Avraham should be appeased. Yeah.
You know what's going on unless they're told.
I guess they're not to know. I guess they don't know unless they're told, yeah. Incidentally, in that connection, I saw an interesting thing. There's the famous question how they had so much riches by the Yamsuf anyway, if they borrowed all their silver and gold. So, of course, there's the obvious answer that they didn't take from the king's palace, and therefore he had all his treasures that he gave out to them when he was telling them to chase the Jewish people. But I saw some, I think the Torah Tzmima says this, I don't remember. He says maybe the vote is, since we find in the Psukim, Bishala Isha Mishchento, Migoras Pesa, so maybe Taka, they're only borrowing from Mitzrayim, where the Jews didn't necessarily live all over Eretz Mitzrayim. For the most part, they lived in Eretz Goshen and in the area near there, like the capital. So in those areas, they borrowed from Mitzrayim, not necessarily in the whole rest of Mitzrayim is Abameas Parasa. Abameas Parasa, Lav Dafka, they borrowed from any Mitzrayim over there. So therefore, all that wealth is available for them to take to the Yamsuf. So the Gemara continues, Omru Loi, so when Moshe tells this to the Jewish people, they tell him, Olavai Shinei Tzabat Zmenu, what do we need money for? Halavai, we should just get out ourselves. Moshal Adam Shayachobish Bevesa Asurim. It's like a person is in jail. And people tell him, tomorrow you're going to be freed from jail. And we're going to give you a lot of money. He says to them, just let me out right away. I don't need anything else. Now, how is that exactly like the Moshal? How is that exactly like the Nimshal, rather? In the Nimshal, they're going out on Tesvav Nissen, whether they have the wealth with them or not. One point is, if they borrow from the Mitzrayim, then the Mitzrayim are going to a few days later realize, hey, these Jews are not returning after 3 days. We better chase after them, and they're going to be in danger all over again. Again, they didn't know yet there's going to be a Kriyas Yamsuf. Mashenkin, they figured if we don't take anything with us, then they have no reason to chase us, and then we'll be free and clear right away. So therefore, they would have said that, which is why Moshe has to plead with them to take the wealth. Well, there's that also. Yeah, but still, that whole night, they had time to do that because they're not leaving until the morning anyway. There is actually another point. I think this one actually is from the Torah Tamimah. He said, you got to think about the scenario over there. The Mitzrayim are all bewailing and crying over their dead. They just had Makas Bechoras. All of a sudden, a Yid waltzes in and says, I want you to lend me this gold and silver. Wouldn't the guy be furious? And who knows what he's going to do to the Yid? So therefore, the Eibishtas especially asked them, nevertheless, even though it seems like completely the wrong time to do it, go do it anyway. Yeah. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ugo'ola. Chavdal and Tishrei. In the time of the Beis Mikdash, we know that gear, you have to have three things. There's Mila, the Tevila, and a Korban. Nowadays, as the Rambam writes, there's no Korban, so you need Mila and Tevila. When the Beis Mikdash is built, then I'll bring a Korban. Nevertheless, we know that the guy is considered a full-fledged gear. So the chiddush is that Rebbe said, doesn't mean just that now he's considered a ger gomer for all purposes. Even when the Beis Mikdash is rebuilt, he will remain a ger gomer l'chol davar. He'll even be able to eat kodshim. And his daughter will be able to marry a kohen, the daughter of a ger is allowed to marry a kohen as long as both of her parents are on gerim. And such a kohen could serve as a kohen, could serve in the Beis Mikdash when it's built. So that means that the ger can be eating kodshim from his grandchildren brought as a korban in the Beis Mikdash before even he himself brings his korban. Because the Rebbe goes on to explain the gear that a ger is misgayer nowadays is a full-fledged gear. The fact that he has to bring korban is a chiyuv of its own. It doesn't prevent him from being a full-fledged ger right now. Halacha, real quick. We were talking about Bas B'cholav. The minhag is not to kasher milchuk dishes to use for fleishiks or vice versa. If it becomes treif, then that's different. But like if you have a keli that you regularly use for milchuk and now you want to kasher it for fleishiks, the minhag is not to do that because that can cause all kinds of confusion. Yeah. If it becomes treif, then you can kasher it. Yeah. Okay.